I was born bold.
Melbourne Airport Parking. Zero cost, drive-up parking for all essential travel until June 30.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome. Tuesday, the 7th of April it is. Great to have your company. The McCafe menu today. Tiger King, if you haven't watched it, you're one of the only in the country, I think. We've got the podcast host, Robert Moore, going to join us to talk about this phenomenon that is just taking the world by storm. We've got David Teague, the coach of the Carlton Football Club, joining us. Liam Pickering as well. Sammy Edmund, the SEN Chief Sports Reporter. And, of course, the latest edition of The Adventures of Whippy Watson. Lots to get through today, as always. And your contribution is valued and needed.
They have a heart and a soul and a mind. I've learned from them.
But Carol Baskin keeps saying, I can't have these tigers.
If he ever had an enemy in his life, it was Carol Baskin.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens, it's Carol at Big Cat Rescue.
Carol is the Mother Teresa of cats.
We will end the private possession of these cats.
This is my way of living, and nobody's going to tell me any otherwise.
That is Joe Exotic, the lead character in The Tiger King. One of many characters, Tim, it has to be said. The collection of people in this, you couldn't make them up if you're writing a movie script. And, hey, one day it may become one. It's certainly a series on Netflix that has taken the world by storm right now. And, well, it's hard to explain. And if you haven't seen it, I suggest you do. But given that we just threw out a question, Tim, that said, give us the AFL player that's most likely to play Joe Exotic, and the response we've had here is unbelievable. Most of our audience have seen this. So Robert Moore hosts the podcast. He follows after every episode of The Tiger King, and he's been kind enough to join us to try and just give us some answers to, no doubt, lots of questions that people have got. Good morning to you, Robert.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Nice to talk to you. Are you surprised at just how big this has become, this whole story, the Tiger King?
Yeah, I was not expecting this. You know, we had this podcast that came out in the fall, and it did pretty well. You know, we got millions and millions of downloads, and we're number one in the iTunes store, but nothing like this. I think the fact that people are locked up in their houses right now, something about this documentary is really striking a chord. Like, watching people who are so unencumbered is really liberating, you know, for people who are stuck in their houses with nothing to do.
Okay, so for those, I was going to try and give a little pricey in the introduction, but I don't know if I can. You'd be much better placed. For those that have no idea what we're talking about, can you give us some sort of an idea of what The Tiger King is about?
Sure, yeah. It's kind of a hard story to summarize, but basically there's a guy in Oklahoma named Joe Exotic who is a self-described gay, gun-carrying redneck with a mullet who has, in any given time, two husbands. He has a feud with a woman in Florida named Carol Baskin because Joe loves to breed tigers. He has this zoo where he breeds dozens of tigers. At one point, he's the largest tiger breeder in America. And Carol is someone who has a sanctuary. She believes you shouldn't be breeding tigers and lions. So they get into a feud. It escalates. At one point, Joe impersonates her. She sues him. Joe impersonates Carol's business. Carol sues Joe. Carol wins $1 million settlement. In his many attempts to get out of it, Joe eventually hires a hitman to kill Carol. But that is really just the surface of it. I mean, the story gets so much stranger the closer you look.
It does. It's so weird, this doco. Carol, for her part, has criticised the Tiger King. She says that the Tiger King had the sole goal of being salacious and sensational as possible to draw viewers. Why would she be surprised by that? That's what this whole thing's about.
Well, I think that Carol, you know, Carol really is a zealot for this cause of banning the private ownership of tigers and lions in America. And I don't know what the laws are like in Australia, but as they point out in the documentary, and as we go into in the podcast, there are more tigers living in America in captivity than there are in the whole world in the wild. It is shocking how many tigers live in cages in people's backyards in America. So, you know, I think that she wanted that to be the focus of the documentary. Unfortunately, there's the inconvenient fact of her husband having disappeared and left her millions of dollars, which, you know, is a case that's never been solved, and there's a lot of very suspicious evidence. So many, many people believe that she killed her husband and or had someone kill her husband and inherited all that money. And the documentary and the podcast, we go into that in great length.
This doco includes, you know, five different true crime tales, including arson, a disappearance, an alleged murder plot that you've spoken about there too. But one of the owners, and I can't recall his name, was the inspiration for the Scarface character played by Al Pacino. Who was that, Robert?
It's Mario Tabrau is that guy's name. Yeah, he's a sort of infamous exotic animal owner down in Florida. Who claims to have been the source for Scarface. There's also Doc Antle, a sort of white Hindu guru wannabe type guy who has his own what appears to be a kind of sex cult in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. There are many, many colorful characters in this movie, in this documentary. They're just coming out of your ears. You almost can't handle all the colorful characters you're getting thrown at you.
Let me just read some notes that I've got in front of me. Some eccentric characters include a former cocaine drug lord running a secret conservation facility, Jeff Lowe, a swinger who sneaks cubs into high-end hotels for parties and to attract women, Tim Stark, owner of the Roadside Zoo Wildlife in Eden, Bhagavan Doc Antle, an animal trainer who founded a 50-acre animal preserve in South Carolina, trains animals for Hollywood films, and has three different girlfriends at the one time. That's your setup right there.
I know. Well, this whole thing, and you guys can tell me this, you know, I'm an American living in Canada, and I have the impression, like, when you watch this, do you feel like you're looking into the soul of America? Like, you're seeing something quintessentially American in all this?
Yes. In a word, yes.
Robert, the other thing about Joe Exotic is that he goes and employs people who are essentially sort of out of prison, who are homeless on the street, and he goes and grabs them and brings them into work for him. So his list and cast of characters just grows by the day.
Yeah, so I originally came into the story intending to write a magazine story. This is back in 2015, and a magazine sent me down to the zoo, and I lived there for a week. I lived in a trailer on the premises for a week. I followed Joe around. I got to know, you know, all of the people involved in all these cast of characters you see at the zoo. And I will tell you, they were very colorful characters working there. You know, the first thing you get when you walk in the door is, like, very strong meth vibes. You know, you just feel like there's a lot of meth going around. There's a lot of missing teeth, a lot of picked at arms and things. But you don't know because you think, well, maybe they just got headbutted by a camel and their teeth fell out. Or maybe they got scratched by a tiger and that's why their arms look like that. It wasn't until later when I started interviewing Joe's former employees that all the truth came out and I learned of all the sordid things going on there.
And so given that you've been down there and you've been around these people and you spent time with Joe Exotic, how is this Tiger King true to how you found them?
It is absolutely accurate to how it feels to be in that zoo and how it feels to be around Joe Exotic. There's no exaggeration there. There are a couple of things I think they get slightly wrong. There's a couple of shots taken out of context. And most of it doesn't matter. There's one or two where it does matter. They seem to have given people the impression that Travis, for spoiler alert, for people who haven't watched yet, you may want to just turn down the volume for a second, that Travis, Joe's husband, killed himself on purpose with that gun. There's the scene of him smoking a cigarette saying, this will be my last cigarette on earth. That's probably taken out of context, and I don't think that it was very clearly an accident, that death. And then also people seem to have left this documentary with the belief that Joe's innocent, that Joe was framed for killing Carol, attempting to kill Carol by hiring this hitman. I sat through that trial. I can tell you for a fact, Joe is not innocent.
He's not innocent.
No, he absolutely was not framed for that crime. That was a crime that he very clearly committed.
Hey, yeah, we've got to keep moving, Robert. It is a fascinating documentary. Our audience are clearly involved, we can see right now. So we'll follow. I haven't quite seen the end of it yet, so I'm looking forward to that. And we appreciate you hopping on and putting some detail around this fascinating story.
I want to say thank you. Also, if people want to go to my Twitter feed, at Robert Moore, M-O-O-R, _, they can see a whole thread of interesting details that's left out of the documentary. And please, we're now having a TV series made out of our podcast. We have Kate McKinnon signed on to play Carol Baskin. Tweet at me your suggestions for who we think should play Joe Exotic. We've gotten a lot of really good ones coming in. I hear you guys are getting some good ones as well.
We are indeed. So that's Robert Moore, M-O-O-R, and you can find him on Twitter and on the social platforms. Thanks for joining us, Rob.
All right, thank you so much.
Only Robert.
Robert, now can we ask export this question?
Yes, could we export Warwick Capa to America to play Joe Exotic?
Which
he's coming through loud and clear, isn't he?
Can play Joe Exotic from the Tiger King. I've written these names down, and then you can keep sending them in, and you can give us a call, 1-300-736-736. I'll give you my top three at the moment. Clive Waterhouse, Rodney Grinter, great mate of mine, won't be happy hearing that. And this might be my all-time favourite, and I think this is the clubhouse leader. Jack Revolt. 1-300-736-736. Send through who can play Joe Exotic. 0433981116. I'll read out some of the other ones after we take a break, Wisp. But I tell you, if you've got three better ones than that, I want to hear about them, okay? Oh, thanks everyone for being a part of the show, having a bit of fun, having a laugh. Lots of suggestions coming through if we were to recast the Tiger King. Some great Peggy O'Neill for Carol. How about that one, Whispers?
I think Peggy's a bit refined for Carol, isn't she?
Well, I'm just throwing them up. Caroline Wilson.
Well, I've got to knock that one
to play
down.
Carol.
So who?
Caroline Wilson.
Oh no, I don't think that. No, Gina, I don't think Reinhardt. That's a profile.
Yep. Mm. Lots of different suggestions coming through. And Ben Cunnington for the husband.
I've just gone back and had a look at the original Adelaide Crows team, you know, the inaugural Adelaide Crows team. That is very funny. Very funny. But a bloke that wasn't in that team, in McIntosh.
Gary McIntosh?
Gary McIntosh. He would have been perfect for this. There would have to be a role for him in there somewhere.
Hey, tomorrow Jalen Rose is going to join us. Really excited about that. He is an absolute genuine superstar. Was college basketball, part of a famous college basketball team, and now is just omnipresent in the sports media landscape over in the States. And then next week, Drew Bledsoe is going to join us as well, Wisp. 14 seasons, quarterback in the NFL. That is going to be massive next week as well.
Famous so, four. What's he most remembered for?
For being the man who got the Kyber for Tom Brady.
That's right. I don't know. Did you watch that? There was a very funny 30, not funny, but a 30 from 30 interview with him. And he owns a vineyard, a big vineyard in Washington State, Drew Bledsoe. And they conducted the interview in the front of this window at the vineyard. And clearly he wanted to promote his wine at the same time. So it would have taken a long time to film the whole thing. But I reckon they just got deeper and deeper into the wine throughout the course of the interview. They could hardly straighten up at the end of the whole thing.
We were allowed in quarantine. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come down to your house. We're going to get into your Fiano, and then I'll do that in-depth interview that I've been promising. Before that, though, we need to speak to the Chief Sports Reporter, Sammy Edmund, for SEN. Welcome, Sammy.
Good morning, Gary. Morning, Timmy. I must be the only person who hasn't watched the Tiger King yet. I'm a one-show-at-a-time man, and I'm deep into Ozarks at the moment. It's there waiting. I'm conscious of the fact.
Well, you'd have to tune in. Well, you get a good a mental picture now of the sort of characters that are going to be involved, given the nominations that have been coming through.
Sounds amazing, actually. Hey, listen, I need to start at Collingwood this morning. I know all injuries at the moment obviously don't take on the same severity or impact that they would normally, given the season's obviously suspended. But Collingwood midfielder Adam Treloar's suffered another hamstring setback. He strained that hamstring, we know, in the last quarter of the Marsh Cup game against Richmond in Wangaratta back on the 1st of March. And we know that wasn't the same area of the hamstring that needed surgery in 2018, but it did keep him out of round one, and now he's given it another nick, training in isolation, obviously. The players are on individual programs at Collingwood like they are at all other clubs, but they're training quite hard because pre-round one, or in Treloar's case, pre his hamstring injury in the Marsh Cup, they're as fit as they'll be for the year, and they don't want to lose that fitness easily, and the players have all been told to report back for duty on May 4 for training. Now, that date hasn't changed, given the AFL's date to reassess the situation resuming the season still sits on May 31. So the players still going quite hard, Gary, but Treloar last week, little setback in the hammy again.
Well, he's got a bit of time, hopefully, to get it right. I'm sure he will. What are the Hawks trying to do? They don't want an AFL handout.
No, well, they're always going to be one of the ones that are going to be funding their own operations, such as the measure of their cash reserves. The other clubs, powerhouses, we know, West Coast, Richmond, Collingwood, and the Crows actually aren't going to take a hand out the age reporting either. They're going to borrow from the Bendigo Bank rather than the AFL. Now, the age also reporting, guys, before we get back to the Hawks, that the Western Bulldogs are going to be one of those clubs as well to draw on their own funds to survive. Who would have thought this? But outside of player payments, they're going to pay their own way, the Dogs. They will remain unassisted and they'll sell funds. That's a great result for that once battling club. You mentioned the Hawks, Gary. You're right. Jeff Kennedy spoke to Channel Wisp last night.
We will not have to draw down from the AFL's facility. It gives us the opportunity to continue to grow our investments, if we can, to remain as independent as we can. Well, and that gives us the opportunity to be constructively critical. I think the important thing from this is for those clubs who will rely on the AFL, who will be assisted clubs, there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Hey, now, Phil, do you want to throw the question at you? Okay. He said there, Jeff Kennett, that gives us the ability or the facility to remain constructively critical. What does that actually mean?
Well, basically, the clubs that take a loan from the AFL, Tim, at a repayment rate of 3.3% will have to provide their books open slather whenever demanded by the AFL. So I guess, for lack of a better phrase, the AFL tentacles will be in their business right up in their face all the way through, as you would understand when they're loaning him potentially significant amounts of money. Those that aren't required to do that, it's been stated, will retain a bigger slice of independence, if you can call it that. So the clubs that don't require the handout obviously don't have to provide the same amount of clarity on their books that the others will.
Okay, my interpretation of that is that because they're not beholden to the AFL in any way, they can swing a little bit freer and easier than everybody else, but the AFL will ultimately instruct you to do what they want you to do because you're one of 18, would they not?
Yeah, and they've already, broad brush, Hawthorn will abide by the financial model that the AFL will put on all the clubs. And they've already asked them to sign documents going back a couple of weeks now saying they will do exactly that, that they, the AFL retain the right to steer the competition on the financial path that they deem fit. And that's what I'm talking about, loans from obviously the ANZ and the NAB that they secured against Marvel Stadium. So broad brush, yes. But it just means the nitty-gritty, the day-to-day stuff, the really finicky financial details, the Hawks won't have to open the books on as regularly.
A very sad story that emerged yesterday was the disappearance at this stage of Michael Hibbard's brother after a fishing trip off Flinders on Sunday morning. The boat was recovered at Phillip Island on Monday, washed up on rocks. That is, our thoughts are clearly with Michael and the whole of the Hibbard family. And is there any development there?
No, sadly there's not, guys. This is a potentially really tragic one. They left 6 a.m. Sunday morning. The weather was pretty rough that day down on the peninsula. They left from Flinders boat ramp. Their boat, you mentioned, Gary, just a 3-metre tinny with an outboard motor. That washed up yesterday at Pyramid Rock. But at the moment, no, still missing. That's Jeff Hibbard and Jason De Silva, who went fishing down there. The search started 9 p.m. Sunday and remains ongoing at this point.
Thoughts with Hibbard, the Hibbard and De Silva families, of course. So, yeah, we've got to keep moving, Sammy. We'll get back. Maybe we'll find some time to talk about, the Hubs situation, which we spoke about briefly yesterday. I heard Jared say that he didn't think that would be a reality, but there are some who are suggesting it's very much on the agenda. Thanks for joining us this morning, mate.
No worries, gents.
Sammy Edmund there. Time for this man.
On SEN Breakfast, it's time for the adventures of Whippy Watson.
Well, Hawthorn are about to join the race. At Glenfrey Oval, the discussion about whether to recruit Whippy Watson is tense. Alan Jean sees Whippy as the answer to all his prayers, but John Kennedy Sr., Dipper Crawf and Steve Quatermain, who's been commandeered as an outside voice, are holding Yabby to account. The great Coach hasn't always been a great recruiter, and having this pointed out to him by Crawf hasn't gone down well.
If you want to continue with this discussion, and this morning you selected two things, you wanted to go back and dig skeletons out of the cupboard.
Crawf shudders in his seat, recalling some of his own footy trip antics. The two most powerful men in the room, though, Jeans and Kennedy, as you'd expect, have taken control of the meeting.
At least do something! Do! Don't think, Mick! Don't hope! Do!
Dipper is sitting in the corner. He's been really quiet. No one has heard a peep out of him. They ask Dipper what he thinks, but his mind appears to be elsewhere.
I have a dog, I have a bird, and I have a wife.
As powerful as Yabby is, he still portrays the figure of a man who believes in consensus.
There is going to be a crossroad, and when you get to that crossroad, you either step up or you step down. It is an entitled, all up to you. You make the decision, not me.
Everyone agrees. It's time to throw caution to the wind, head off into the unknown and try to recruit the fat kid from Dimbuka. But it's a long trip, and the party will need supplies. As fortune would have it, a local trader pops his head in with provisions.
Tell them, Tom, we have the talking hams and bacon for you there. The one you've had it before.
Oh, I've had it before.
And you've had it before. You know how good it is?
Great.
And we have Mrs. Bright, of course, for washing your clothes and so forth. You hold that for us everyone, please. And we have also McMahon's pure honey too for you, for both of you. Thanks very much, dear.
Well stocked.
Crawf is over the moon with the catering.
That's what I'm talking about!
But as the car hums down the highway, a fight between Dunstall and Quarters over who gets to sit near the window in the back seat has broken out, and it's getting ugly.
You're talking
We're on a better than that.
No, you shut up and listen instead of talking
me like that.
Well, then I won't talk to you. Get out.
Will do.
I will not work with someone like get out of try now. Go on, nick will off. Do. Just throwing a whole tray of food on me.
A whole tray.
Nick off. I'm not
crumbs.
Working with those.
Shut up.
Get out. That is unacceptable behaviour. Get out, Jason.
Will Yabby be able to keep the two recalcitrants in the back seat apart, or will one of them have to trade the dicky seat in the front with Crawf? Find out next time on The Adventures of Whippy Watson.
Oh, dear, man. That might be my favourite Whippy. I just knew Dunstall and Quarters in the car on a long trip, that was always going to end in tears. That was always going to end in tears. And I thought Dipper's contribution I thought Dipper's contribution was just sitting in the corner. I thought that was strong. That was a very, very good rendition. You can contribute. Don't forget, contribute. And I can tell you this. We've had so many, you can get it, catch it up on the podcast, had so many people talk about this. And you know the overwhelming feedback I'm getting?
No, what
Why
is it?
Haven't Collingwood bought into this?
Am I smelling something in the wind?
I think we might be hearing from the Magpie contingency tomorrow. If you've got some suggestions about the Magpies and how they could get involved, send through those suggestions, 0433981116. We're going to take a break. Don't forget the call of the year. Could win a brand new Toyota Kaluga GX two-wheel drive. Buy your new Toyota online. Search Toyota, order and collect. We're going to straighten up a bit too. Great to have you with us this morning. Just exploring lots of different topics. Got deep into that coaching and philosophical debate there, and that was fantastic. And then in amongst all that, Roberta Williams, Serena Williams and Lady Gaga to play Carol. So they still love the Tiger King. Doesn't matter how deep you get, Mitch, they still want to talk about the Tiger King. I was thinking about David Teague the other day. I was, crossed my mind that here's a man that's probably, after his footy career, waited all his life to get the opportunity to coach at senior AFL level, and we know he did a fantastic job in the interim last year. But now, as his own man, he got one taste of it, and then they ripped the competition away from him. It seems very cruel. He joins us on the line. Welcome, Teague.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Now what? It just doesn't seem right that you've all of a sudden you've done all that hard work. You particularly have waited and waited and waited and got the opportunity. Is it frustrating in any way?
Oh, look, it's disappointing. I think everyone involved in the AFL wants the games to be going ahead and playing, but there's a bigger power to be. I think I'm comfortable with the situation we're in at the moment. We just got to deal with it.
And so, how do you find yourself? You based at home. What's your day look like?
I'm based at home. I'm actually sitting out in the car at the moment doing this, so I could find a quiet space. It's quite hard to get a lot of work done, so it is challenging. I'm lucky. My mother-in-law lives about 500 metres around the corner, and they've gone away. They've gone down to their beach house to isolate. So I've been ducking around there for some quiet time, but lots of meetings on the computer and the phone, which is probably not my strong point. I love interacting with people, and I love the game. I love the players, and right now we don't have those two things, so it is a challenge, but it's a challenge for all. And in the bigger picture, like I said earlier, it's probably the smaller side of the challenges.
Hey, David, we've been talking a lot about coaching this morning, and I was with Gary just before, just talking about my time at Essendon under Kevin Sheedy and that type of thing, and what an influence he was, and other coaches that came along, and how they influenced me and others and the team, that type of thing. For you, now that you're stepped up and you're a coach in your own right, is there one of those coaches or assistants along the way that influenced you more than others, or are you a product of all those people that you've been associated with during that period of time?
Yeah, look, you're always learning, and you never stop learning. There's probably a couple. Phil Walsh is probably my biggest one, biggest influence. Just the way he prepared, he saw the game, his football intellect, he probably impacted me the most, and his probably ability to connect with people, his emotional intelligence was really strong. So he's probably the one. Dennis Pagan's probably the other one. As a young footballer coming through, there's nothing like just doing the basics well, and it hasn't changed in time, and Dennis was very big on that. So they've probably been the two that have had the biggest influence. But as you mentioned, you're learning the whole way along from everyone. Not always what they do well, but sometimes what people don't do well, and you think, I think we can do that better and change as well.
With the late Dean Bailey, I had this conversation about Philip Walsh once, and he said what a genius he was, a football genius. Can you give us some insights as to what it was about him, or how he saw the game so differently that sort of opened your eyes to a whole different way of viewing it, maybe?
Yeah, he's probably he played the game, which obviously was one aspect, but then he actually taught as a teacher. So the educational side behind a coach, he had a touch on that. He then went to Geelong and was the head of high performance, or the conditioning coach. So he just had a really well-rounded game of football, and then he put the hours in. The amount of vision that he would watch, he would watch every game from every weekend, particularly as an assistant coach at West Coast. He'd be first in, and he'd be watching opposition games, key moments, and he just had a great understanding of the game. He also, one thing that really jumped out at me, I was at Adelaide at the time, and we're playing Fremantle, and we're talking about who do you tag Fife with, and he goes, let's just put Dangerfield to go head-to-head with Fife, and we sort of looked at him, and he was like, that's what the fans want, we're custodians of the game, which sort of surprised me. I'd always seen him as this ruthless competitor, and I think he still thought we'd win doing it this way, but he goes, the fans want to see this, he wanted to see scoring. And it probably changed from my time at West Coast. I didn't see that side of him as much. But when he was a senior coach, he felt he had a responsibility to the fans and to the game to make it entertaining as well, which is something that definitely impacted me.
Chris Fagan said a similar thing at the start of last year about the need and want to play attractive footy to make it an attractive team to go and watch. Where do you sit in terms of your obligation to that?
Yeah, I have to admit, I was a dour defender with not a lot of talent. Then I did the back line for a fair while as a coach. I was very much around defence, but probably my time in Adelaide and seeing Adelaide's ability to score and the joy that they had, and then looking at trends across the game, Golden State Warriors, even in the NFL, other than the New England Patriots, the games have been evolving. Soccer's probably the only game where defence is still your number one stat. So the rules in these other games are changing to allow more scoring, and I'm a believer. I think I want our fans to come to the game. We've got great little fans, but I want to see us kick some goals. And even if we lose, if we're kicking 12, 13 goals and we're losing, at least one of those is going to be something they can take home for them and cheer about. So ideally, I'd love to play a brand of footy that's exciting, but you look at games, if it's a close game, Pan seems to get in. It doesn't matter what the score is, they get into it as well. And I'm probably a young coach. The older coaches are probably shaking their heads going, when he gets older, he'll realise defence wins games. That keeps your job. But right now, I'm hoping our style's pretty aggressive, pretty attacking, and something our fans love.
That's music to the ears of the general supporter. Hey, you would have been doing a lot of looking at tapes and going over stuff, I would imagine. Is there one thing you've learned or changed your mind on or formed an opinion on throughout this period because of the extra time that you've got to devote to stuff that you would otherwise be, spent coaching players? Has there been anything where you've looked at it and gone, gee, yeah, I'm looking at that a little bit differently, I'm looking at that side a bit differently or that player a bit differently? Is any one thing?
Look, nothing's jumped out at me. I've watched the Richmond game with most players now because obviously a lot of the coaches are off doing other work or aren't at work at the moment. So I've been sitting down watching the Richmond game. I'm nearly over that game. I've watched it about 45 times. So, but more so from an individual player point of view, the team point of view, they were very good. They got us on the outside. But there's probably nothing that jumped out as such. It's one game. It hasn't been a... We don't really. If we got five rounds in, I think you could really have a look at it and get some trends. But from a whole, there's nothing that's jumped out at me at the moment.
And just one specific footy question too, just quickly. Charlie Curnow. The season will restart at some stage. What's your expectation now with Charlie as to where he's at with his recovery?
Yeah, look, his recovery's going well. There's no time frame being put on it yet. We have to wait to see how he handles the increase in loads. It's an interesting injury where it's not common, so we just don't know. And how Charlie handles it versus someone else that's had this injury, it could vary a lot. So far it's going really well. He's training really hard. His mindset's really good at the moment. So I think if he keeps progressing, hopefully sooner rather than later, we'll get a definitive time frame of how long that'll be.
Good to catch up, Teagy. Stay safe, and we'll talk again soon. Hopefully, with footy not too far away.
No, that'll be great. I'm missing it a little bit.